Welcome to the old school meeting of Overeaters Anonymous, featuring speakers with long-term abstinence. This meeting was born online, and it's going to stay that way. That means you can attend live on Tuesday evenings at 6:30 Pacific. And now, our speaker.
Hi, my name is Morley. I certainly am a compulsive overeater. And it's really terrific seeing old friends here. Lonnie, haven't seen you in a long time. And Jack, of course, we've connected recently. Carl and John B., I saw you on Monday. So it's great to be here. It makes me feel really, really nice to be here. I can say I came into this program in 1982, July 1st, 1982. The reason I know that is because my best friend, my binge buddy, left for Hawaii on the day before. No, I came in July 2nd. He left July 1st for Hawaii. I came in on July 2nd. Bill B's meeting on Houser Street on Wilshire Boulevard. And it was like this incredible revelation. I'd been in therapy my whole life since I was 15, group therapies, all sorts of things. When people talked about their careers and talked about their relationships, I had no career. I wasn't interested in those things. But when I came to my very first OA meeting, people talked about eating and the food and the disease. And it was like this tremendous feeling of coming home, of finding myself. And I remember the guy who spoke my first meeting was a guy who had been homeless also. And at that time, I wasn't homeless. I was living in an apartment. I'd been fired from jobs. And I was living in a two-room apartment by myself with boxes and crates all over the place, packages and things like that. And I had holes in my clothes and gums that bled. And what happened was happened to change me was the second part of the first step. It was clearly, and I knew I was powerless over food. I'll explain to you how I ate in a little while, maybe I will. But what struck me, and I swear to God, I had never thought about it, but my life was unmanageable. I didn't know that. There I was in my early 30s and living no life, and I didn't realize my life was unmanageable. That's what clinched the deal for me, and that's what brought me into the rooms. And at that time, I was working at a job as a temp person, and I'd get up in the morning, eat some food at home, drive to the freeway, stop at a 7-Eleven, get the same ritual foods, and then get on the freeway, stop, get off the freeway in Santa Monica, go to my favorite donut shop, always get three of the same donuts, get to the hospital where I worked as a nurse, and I would go to the cafeteria and have a big breakfast, robust breakfast. And then on the way up to the fourth floor, the third floor where I worked, I'd stop at the vending machines and fill my pockets with all sorts of candies and stuff like that. That's what my life was like. All I knew was how to eat. And, for a long time, there was periods of binging, and I'd be anorexic. I'd go up and down 70, 75 pounds three times a year. I blew my knees out over-exercising. I became a bulimic, exercise bulimic. I blew my knees out preparing for the New York Marathon. I was underweight, and it was just a terrible way of living. Okay, going back further, I came from a very dysfunctional household. My parents were really unhappy people. They made everybody else in the world and their children unhappy too. And my older sister's in and out of mental hospitals, and if I hadn't found this program, I would have to. I can tell you that when I was 18, I graduated high school. I rode around the town I was born and raised in, North Hollywood, California, and did not have one telephone number to call. Not one person did I know as a friend. And I used to go to the Greyhound bus station and sit there and put a quarter in this TV and watch TV at the Greyhound bus station, because that's all I knew how to do. Was just kind of wander around aimlessly places because I had no orientation. I had no place to go, nothing to do. And that's how I lived. That was like I was 18, 19 years old. When I came into program, I was still living the same way. I was bicycling excessively or I was eating excessively. And I always had maybe one friend that knew me, like this binge buddy who left for Hawaii. And so I came into program, got abstinent right away, lost 75 pounds, started spending a lot of money, started buying jewelry for myself, having a custom made, buying $200 Italian boots that at that time in the early 80s, that was a lot of money. And I started going into debt because I was such a driven and crazy compulsive person. But my weight was down, and my sponsor told me that I had to start dating. And I said, oh, I didn't want to do that, but I had to. I was a young man, 32. I should be dating. What's the point, you know, of anything if I'm not, you know, trying to get close to people? So I made lists of people I could call, and they were part of my Saturday day off lists. It was like work, you know. Finally, I had a date with an OA woman, very attractive Asian American, Chinese woman, actually. She spoke with an accent. Her name was Chinese. Very attractive. She worked in radio. She drove a red Porsche. At the time, I didn't have a car. And she picked me up in her red Porsche, driving up, picked me up on the curb. Spent the whole afternoon to the evening together. And she was really attractive. And at the end of the evening, she gives me this, at my door, she dropped me off. She gives me this big, juicy, full-body hug. And put my arms around her shoulders, and I tapped her on the shoulders, you know, and I was so frightened. And I hated myself because I couldn't be sexual. I didn't know how to be intimate, didn't know how to be in relationships. And I went out, and I gained all the weight back. Over months, I gained all that weight back. And I can honestly say mine has not been one of those pretty pictures coming in, getting it right away. The things that helped over time was service, but I isolated through service as well. The thing that changed my life, the thing that changed my program, the thing that changed everything was the Northridge earthquake in 1994. I was living in Northridge, working in the hospital there as a nurse, Northridge Hospital, right in the most damaged zip code, right in the corner of Reseda and Roscoe, and I lost my apartment. I got injured, didn't work for 4 months, was totally traumatized, PTSD, and I was out in Henderson, Nevada, in a cheap motel, visiting my mother to get away from the aftershocks, visiting my mother. How far am I doing? How much time do I got left? I want to get to the present.
You have 9 minutes before your 2-minute warning.
Okay. I got a little time. So I was laying there in this cheap motel with my splinted leg. I tore all the muscles in my right leg, jumping out of a staircase that had fallen off the wall in my apartment building when it went down around me. I tore all the muscles in my left calf, and I had the splint on. My leg was in a lot of pain. I had it up in 4 pillows in this cheap motel, clattering air conditioner at 10 o'clock at night. And this thought came to me, why am I having to go through this alone? I had never asked myself that question here. Why am I living alone? Why do I want to be alone? I went through real post-traumatic stress stuff. I cried and I whimpered and my eyes were tearing and I shivered and I shook and I felt my loneliness for the first time. What I realized was that what was driving my food addiction and my others was loneliness. Some people talk about anger. Some people talk about resentments. What was driving my eating from the time I was an early child with a fat kid was my loneliness. My parents didn't like me, they didn't want me, they didn't give me anything at all, emotional connection, and the food was my lifeline. And what I realized in that earthquake is that what was driving me was my loneliness. I was so alone and didn't have friends, didn't believe in friendship. The professor at the university, I was studying Cal State Northridge, ethics class, first day, he says, friendship's not an option. And I argued with him all semester until he won the argument. And I finally had to acknowledge that I needed friends in my life. And I started trying to date. I dated the first woman I dated, started beating me up, cold, hypersexual, just like my mother. And I realized that I had a long way to go to find real relationship. But the difference was now I wanted to be in relationship. And about the same time in a meeting, Serenity Sunday in the park in Roxbury, you know, Roxbury Park, Gene, an old timer, said, if you're working this program alone, you're not working the program. And that was the big deal for me because I saw how I was constantly drifting away from sponsors, not doing fellowship, not participating in the program, going to meetings and sleeping through meetings and walking out and wondering why it didn't work for me. I spent 9 years in CHOW, being very anorexic, being very underweight because they have a very strict and very structured food plan. And I always used it to abuse myself by undereating. And so I realized I needed to really come out of myself, out of my shell, and find relationship in program. Well, in the mid-20s, 2002, I finally made the decision to start making friends in program. And I finally decided to start going out to fellowship with people. All this is part of a continuum of surrendering to my need of recovery, my need of getting abstinent. I go through 4 or 5 years of abstinence and lose it for 3 or 4 years, 6 months, and gain it again. And it was all chaos. And I discovered that I was very emotionally kind of still kind of like hurt inside and wounded and very, very self-protected. So I started making friends in program. I started going to fellowship after the meetings, hanging out. And little by little, things started changing. I eventually found the woman I married, and I got married. It was a revelation. I had never had the emotional connection to another human being in my entire life that I had with this woman. And it was very healing, very close. It ended for reasons. It ended because I didn't know how to be in a relationship. She didn't either. But the real big important part was that I found companionship and emotional connection to another human being that I had never known before. And it was really, really a big, big changer, big life changer. So moving closer to the here and now, what I learned over time, this is more close to the last couple of years, maybe 3 or 4 years, 2 or 3 years, is that there's no real recovery without self-love. I think we all hold this business about, you know, self-esteem, doing estimable acts. And I've done plenty of estimable acts. I've come out of my rage. I've done all my 10 step. I've worked on myself. I've learned over the years, over decades, 41 years, that as long as I'm abstinent, emotionally alive, I can learn and grow. If I'm eating and numbed, I can't grow as a human being. So with all the turmoil, the ups and downs, losing the abstinence, gaining it, I've had enough time abstinent where I've actually grown as a human being. And the big message from that was without self-love, there's no real recovery because that's what was missing. I never got love from my parents, didn't know what it looked like or felt like. And so I developed, from another program, I learned to look in front of the mirror 25 times every day, say, I love you. I love you, I love you, changing the expression of it as often as possible. And I can't tell you how important that's been to me since I learned that, because lots of times I don't feel like I love myself. I know how to self-correct. I know how to look at myself in the mirror naked, even if I'm overweight, and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, until I believe it. And when that happens, my inner life gets quiet, I get solid, I get relief from all the anxiety and all the conflicting stuff going on in my mind. And so this is self-love. It was really a revelation. How much time do I got left, Heidi?
4 minutes and 44 seconds altogether.
Yeah, and a little early. Okay, so basically, I still work a program 41 years in. I just did some 9-step writing for my sponsor. I actually said a 9-step amends to some people from, I guess it's 10-step. I really think, after the 9-step, in the current times, if I make a mistake to do something I need to make amends for, I consider it part of my 10-step. So the point is I cleave to my program. I cleave to my friends. I also heed. That's a big word for me right now. Heed means to pay attention and listen to the advice. Pay attention, listen to the warning signs, pay attention, and follow direction. I didn't know how to follow direction before a program. And so being heedful, in fact, sometimes when I'm having trouble with my abstinence, I'll write H-E-E-D right on my fingers, right? So every time I'm around someone else's plate, I don't take from their plate. If I'm cleaning up my dishes after dinner, I don't eat while I'm cleaning up. You know, when I go through periods when I need to do that, going to any lengths, I actually write heed right there. And the closeness I feel to my program in my higher power is really something that's, I'm 75 years old, it's grown over time. So being heedful is really important, and I use that tool whenever I feel like I'm feeling wishy-washy in my commitment to my own recovery. And so after 41 years, I still do a 10 step every night, email it to my sponsor. We talk almost every day. I'm doing this 9-step and running it by him first, or this amends letter first, because I've hurt people in the past by doing amends without it being good, right, because I didn't run it by anybody. I'm not slipping and sliding. I'm not leaving my sponsor. I do a 10-step every day. I keep track of all my food. I'm a WHAM person. I weigh and measure at home. And now my wife and her adult son weigh and measure. I've had that influence on them. And they use my scale all the time. They didn't even think of doing that before they met me. So I consider it a contribution to the family, health. And so I weigh and measure my food, not out when I'm out in the community, but at home, help me know what portion size is. Big issue is portion size, of course. I do my 4th step. I do a prayer meditation in the morning. I meditate an hour. And I have all sorts of religious spiritual connections with different communities. And I do a 10-step every night. Yeah, right. And structure is really important. And all these things, when I have sponsees who don't want to do a 10-step at night and don't want to take the actions that I suggest, 2 minutes left. Thank you. I eventually have to ask them, are they committed? Maybe I'm not the right person to sponsor them. We have discussions. Okay, so where I am today is I'm abstinent and sober in all my programs, because I got more than just one. And I, at this point, after 41 years, I see all of them as of the peace. Numbness versus being aliveness. If I want to be alive, I have to take the pain, discomfort, and anxiety. It happens still. And I have to be willing to be a little hungry between meals. Just this afternoon, before I came onto this meeting, I reminded myself that no one ever died between lunch and dinner. And I can wait till 8 o'clock, 7:30, 8 o'clock to have my dinner. And that I when I go on vacation, I take it with me. I have all this. I have all these components in my 10-step. I have it on my tablet. So wherever I go, I take the program with me. And I know for me at 75, I've now lived in program longer than before program. I cannot live without participating. I go to a meeting every day of the week, except if something particular happens that disallows that. My commitment is every day a week, sometimes twice a week. Today I was in a meeting in another program at noon, and I'm at this meeting today now. One of the things that takes me away from my program is if I'm not going to enough meetings. So I am a fully institutionalized person, and I'm very grateful for that. And that's all I got to say. I think I was going to end it right there. Thank you, everybody.